This morning, shortly after I got up, I looked at my phone and I had a text from a close friend informing me of the passing of Rav Nachum Eliezer Rabinovich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And ever since then, since this morning, I've been very, as we say, I've been tarud b'machshavti. I've been very busy with my thoughts and about him, about the life that he lived, his personality and the Torah that he left behind, and the leadership and students that he's left behind him. And all day I've been thinking really about his personality, and I wanted to share some thoughts. Lili Nishmat, Harav Nachum Eliezer, and Sarah Miriam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Nachum Eliezer Rabinovich. Well, I can say that I was never personally a Talmud of his in the formal sense, having not learned in his yeshiva, having not gone to his shirim. I was a Talmud in the sense that I was zocha over the past years to learn through his svarim. One of my favorite svarim in the world is Shutziach Nachum, and those that know me know that I spend much time on that specific sefer and discuss it greatly. And many of his other svarim. I was zocher a few times over the past few years to meet him and to see him in shul on Shabbosim when I would be in Male Adumim. And one thing always struck me, whenever I was there, no matter how hard it was for him to get to shul, almost always without fail he would be there. And he would sit there with one of his sons or his grandsons, with a sitter, larger print due to his age and unfortunate failing health over the past few years. And he would always make sure to sit there and to daven and to pay attention with leaning. And he always waited to be the last person out of shul so that everyone that would walk by felt the kavod to go and say good Shabbos to him, not for his own kavod, but because he knew that people looked to him and wanted to say good Shabbos to the Rosh Yeshiva. And he didn't rush out of shul, but he sat there and was one of the last people, if not the last person, to leave shul, to let people knowing that he walked slower, to let people leave the shul before him so that he wouldn't hold people up, and to allow people to come and wish him good Shabbos. And one of the times I remember I was in Male Adumim for Parshat Mishpatim, and as we know, Parshat Mishpatim, as Rav Schechter likes to quote, you learn Mishpatim with Rashi and you just finished all Seder, Nezikin, Shas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Mishnayot. And I asked Rabinovich what might have been a silly question. I said, how do you sit and you sit through the laning on Parshat Mishpatim and you think of all the shirim that you've given, all the svarim you've written, all in Yad Pshuta through the Rambam, all the shirei klalim on the yeshiva masechta that you've been giving over the past 60 years? And he looked at me and he said, he responded so simply, he said, I sit here and I listen and I follow along. I just follow along inside. You know, I put my finger on the word and I sit here and I follow along the psukim. Yeah, there's a shir kali that I gave on every single pasuk in the parsha, but right now we're listening to Torah reading, and I think that one story really epitomized what Rav Rabinovich was about: a certain simplicity, a certain anava, a certain sense of I'm just a normal person. He never, as Rav Sabato mentioned in his hesped just now, that he never requested kavod. He never requested that they give him all special, unique treatment. He never requested to be anyone any different than any other person in the world. And that's something that was unique, that was special. That ability to just come a normal person, to be, you know, I sit here and I follow along. As someone pointed out, that, I forget who it was, that I think it was his oldest son in his hesped pointed out that he might have deserved and would have normally, under normal circumstances, had a levaya with thousands of talmidim and people from all across the world, all across at least the religious spectrum in Eretz Yisrael, come to be at his levaya. But the fact that only Mer, immediate family, could be there, well, about 1,500 or so watched along on the YouTube link, and I'm sure many others on the other places it was followed along. and being broadcast, that this was the Levaya that was so fitting for a man who was tsanua, who was quiet, who just wanted to be himself. Rav Rabinovich was born in 1928, and just about a week or so before he was passed away, celebrated his 92nd birthday. And he was born in Canada, where he started learning with Rav Hirschsprung, Gdolei Ador, post the Shoah, from a young age at only 14. And then he went and he learned at Ner Yisrael, where he was very close to Rav Ruderman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and in the end married his niece. And while he was in Ner Yisrael, he got his master's in math from John Hopkins. And I was talking to, and he got smicha from Rav Ruderman there. And I was talking about a few months ago with his grandson, Rav Zecharia, who's a Ram in Shalavim, about his grandfather, and we would speak a lot about different halachic psakim and opinions and machshava of his grandfather, and we had many, many great conversations about him as a person, him as a rabbi, him as a grandfather, him as a mechanech. And I said, out of curiosity, we all know that in Ner Yisrael, the hashkafa is a little bit more right wing, generally not as the average Talmud in Ner Yisrael is not working on their master's in mathematics and doesn't later go on to complete a PhD in philosophy of science and mathematics from the University of Toronto and, you know, teach college classes in mathematics either. And I asked him, what was that like when he was learning in Ner during this time when he was doing, you know, a master's in math? And Rav Zecharia responded, he said, that was normal. He said, you know, for his grandfather, he was someone who, he was coming to the Beis Medrash and he was Koveya Itim, and he was one of the brightest people and setting his time in the Beis Medrash, and then he would go and he would learn and he would do his master's in math, and that was, for him, there was no question about it, there was no difficulty about it. And anyone who, that was part of his hashkafa, was not necessarily this your classic sense of Torah Umada, but really it was all one, doing his PhD in mathematics, on statistical sugyot and Chazal, and the Talmud wrote that they've translated just now a few years ago for, I believe, his 90th birthday. They translated it into Hebrew. And I remember numerous times I've opened it and not understood a word of it, math not being my strongest point, let alone a PhD thesis in statistics and Talmud. And it's one of those things that I've told myself numerous times I would really love to properly understand and read and put time and really just understand even the most basic level of it. And that was part of Romanovich's personality, was this ability that everything was so, it's all Torah. And you see that in any one of his psakim, and many, it's known that Rav Rabinovich in the halachic world and his psakim was someone who had no fear in being a das yachid, in going out on a limb and saying, you know, things that he 100% believed to be true. As Rav Zecharia mentioned in his hesped at the Levaya, that emes was the first and last thing on Rabinovich's mind. He was always wanting to do the truth and to boil things down to the greatest of truths. And that's something that I think we really see. Anyone who's read any of his tshuva, whether it's in Milam de Milchama, about halachic shailas that come up in the army, whether it's in Shut Siach Nachem, his incredible tshuva, whether it's in the tshuva they've published of his, and Shut Puah, dealing with shailas in infertility and reproduction, and Hilchos Nida, and many, many other places, you know, on the Bali Adim website, you see this sense of, I have to get down to the truth. And whether it's articles he's written in Tchumen recently, I spent much time looking into induction stovetops, and that's something that you see, you read it, any one of his things, whether it's Tshuva and Ziach Nachum about microwaves or induction stovetops in Tchumen or many other places, this idea that I have to understand exactly how it works and then apply the sugyos that we know and apply them. And even if that might not be the consensus in the postgame, he was willing to really go out on a limb and to say what he really truly believed to be true. And this was something that most Rebbeim don't have the shoulders to go out on a limit and to go out and do. And he felt very strongly that this is what was necessary, and this is what he felt with all of his psakim. This is 100% true, whether that's with, you know, many of his opinions on electricity on Shabbos being only uved in the chol, and censors being, you know, as he's, and all these many other ideas that he was really a machadish. He was definitely a chadshan when it came to halacha. He was very, very unique. And that's a balance that he struck that was very unique. On one hand, he was incredibly open-minded and, you could argue, liberal in his derech ha-psak and the way he thought and the way he approached the halachic process. But at the end of the day, he was also the most conservative in every one of his tshuvot. I say, you can open up Siach Nachum and shoot Siach Nachum, and almost every single one of his tshuvot start out the same way. Here's the Gemara. Here's the Rambam. See what I wrote in my Perush Yad Pshut Al Rambam. Here's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. And here's why we should be Mekel, and whatever the halacha would be. This is why Psak is. And it's something that very, very often he would go through the system. He would go through the process, and he would come and he would say, you know what? This is the halacha. And he was very, very often someone who approached the modern sugyas that we have with an eyesight of what did Chazal say, what did the Rambam say, what did the Aruch HaShulchan say. He felt very, very strongly, just like Rav Henkin was his Rebbe in Halacha. He learned really, he was learned Derech HaPsach from Rav Henkin, even though he was never a formal student of Rav Henkin's. When he was a Rav, both in Montreal and in Charleston, he would send many letters to Rav Henkin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he had many detailed discussions with him on halachic sugyas, and he felt very strongly that the derech he got from Rav Henkin was really his derech as opposed to, like, even though he never formally learned by him, and that's where he got his strong conviction that the Aruch HaShulchan was the posek achron, as Rav Henkin himself was a musmach of Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein, Aruch HaShulchan. And Rav Rabinovich brought that down back to Eretz Yisrael throughout with him, and that's why his son, Rav Mordechai, has written a perush on a few areas of the Aruch HaShulchan, as well as, you know, many other things, Mishnayot and Art Scroll, that he's translated and written the footnotes for. And that's something that Rav Rabinovich really always brought with him, was that bringing that antiquity of halacha back into the modern life, and saying that, you know what, based on the halacha klalim we have, we shouldn't be machmir for A, B, or C, because it seems to be pashut A. As in, he said, I don't understand the whole hack regarding microwaves. The walls don't heat up. It heats up the molecules in your food. And he was approaching it from the eyes of a scientist, a mathematician. He was approaching electricity on Shabbos from the world of science and the world of halacha. And it was all one. It wasn't two separate things. He understood how things really worked. And that was one of the things that was amazing about Rav Rabinovich. I have a good friend and former roommate who, I remember very clearly once he had a question. David, he told me after the fact, he had a question from a Talmud of his who was a recent Baal Tshuva in Australia, and he came to Eretz Yisrael. And when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he was told that his father, unfortunately, he was Chozer B'Tshuva about 6 months earlier. And he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he was told his father was unfortunately very ill. About 6 months after he was Baal Tshuva, he was called by the hospital, by family members from the hospital, saying that it unfortunately looks like his father wasn't going to last more than 48 hours. It was a Friday. And he wanted to know if he could fly back to Australia to see his father one more time. And he called my friend David, who was a little shocked by the question. And he said, you know, I can't pass Yishailas. And he called one of his Rebbeim, who was a Talmud of Rabinovich, and he said, I don't have the shoulders to pass him this, but call Rav Rabinovich. And he called Rav Rabinovich, and Rav Rabinovich, in his sometimes overly simplified, not overly simplified, but he just looked at things in a very, very posh way, and he said, I don't understand. The Gemara says, your Mechal Shabbos for Chayisha. It's Meforash Mishnah Brura that you could get on a boat for this exact case. So he said, I don't understand what's the question. And he said, it's so posh. If you told the guy's father that you're, even though he's not doing well, he's going to be on a plane and he'll be here in X amount of hours. His father's going to fight on for as long as possible just to see his son one last time. That's the definition of Chayisha. And he said, Pashut, he should get on the plane. Halacha says you get on the plane. And that story to me, I was thinking about it earlier, I was talking to my wife about it. That story is exactly what Rav Rabinovich was about. How do I balance halacha, medicine, metzias, and the psychology and the sensitivities of man behind it? I know from when I was talking about this story with my friend David afterwards, he said that for him, his biggest fear was that halacha might say that it's aser. And then he's going to question, if only I wasn't chozer b'tshuva, I'd get to see my father one more time. And that was those questions, those sensitivities were all part of Rav Rabinovich's mindset. You open up his shutziach nacham, his tshuva. Can social workers go to the scene, unfortunately, of a terrorist attack on Shabbos? And he says, of course. What do you mean? And he held 100% that social workers can go to the scene of a terrorist attack on Shabbos. Can army rabbis carry their phones on Shabbos in order that they can go and give sichot? You know, unfortunately, or to deal with halachic issues during war, to give a little chizuk to the soldiers. Yotzot halacha. A lot of these questions that Rabinovich and Yotzot halacha, he approaches the question. He says, I don't understand. It seems pasher from the Gemara that this is what happened. Look at the Ramban and many other Rishonim. It seems clear that this is what was. And that was part of Rabinovich's whole mindset. His whole personality was conveying the sensitivities of man into the antiquities of halacha. And what came out was one of the most unique personalities that I personally ever met and have read about in the last generation. And that's something that was really unique. And his son mentioned this at the Levaya, and many people I've heard the story before, that when his wife was sick beforehand, the mitapel, the aide, mitapel or the aide for his wife, would feed the cat each and every day, a cat outside his house. And unfortunately, after his wife was nifteret, she passed away, Rav Rabinovich came home from shul and he saw that the aide wasn't still living with them after his wife was nifteret. And Rav Rabinovich personally, every day, would give the cat milk. And he said he would come home from Mariv and the cat would follow him inside and wait by the kitchen table, and he would fill up a bowl of milk and he would feed the cat. How many Rosh Yeshiva in their 80s and 90s take the time to pour a bowl of milk for a cat? Or as Rav Rabinovich said, whenever he would go visit his grandfather, he would bring his kids. Well, they might sit and talk and learning. His grandfather got so much hana just bouncing his great-grandchildren on his knee while he spoke to his grandson and great-grandchildren and learning. That's part of what it's like. That was part of his personality. Helping everyone, doing everything he can. That was something that he spent so much time delving into, learning, working about. How can he affect and help other people? Whether that was his work, opening up Giyur Kalacha, being the really main, first major posek to sign on and to say we need to have private Bate Din to allow for conversion outside of the Rabbanut. Not getting to the Sugya now, but for him it was so clear that it needed to be done because we were dealing with thousands and thousands of people coming in from the former Soviet Russia and Safek Jews, non-Jews, and he said we need to just convert them. We're talking about thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people that were coming to Eretz Yisrael, and with questions about whether or not they were going to be Jewish, not Jewish, and how they're going to mix into the community. He said, everyone, we need to do everything we can to help them. And he was constantly doing everything he could to help other people. And that was something that was so unique. That was something that, on one hand, he was so open-minded and liberal when it came to certain aspects of halacha and machshava and openness to the world and to women's issues and to sensitivities, and such a conservative at the same time, that one of the articles I read this morning about him pointed out that on one hand, if you'd read some of his tshuva, you'd think he's a very liberal, open Orthodox rabbi, and then you see some of his other tshuva and he's the most right-wing person. And, you know, whether that was his incredibly staunch opposition to Gush Katif, removing all the Jews, the Natkut, and telling soldiers don't go, you're better to go to jail than to be part of it. So on the other hand, whether it's some of his psakim regarding electricity and other areas in halacha and woman being, at SOAT was one of the really first major opinions to come out about these issues. And that was something that was just such a, that shiluv, that mixture between him, was part of him. His philosophy, his machshava and Mesilot Bilvavam and other dozens of other articles that he's written, where he discusses philosophy on modern society, on the role of mankind and women in the modern society, the role of the State of Israel, was so clear. Everything, things to him, he had such a very sharp outlook on life, such a clear derech. And to me, that was something that always, whenever I saw him, he was, and spoke to him and listened to things and read his writings, it was things were very clear to him. That's one of the things that his grandson mentioned in his hesped for Rabinovich at the Levaya, was that he called him one day, he went to visit him and he was crying, and he said, there were sugyot that I spent hours on that I could tell you a shir kol inside and out, and I knew it off the top of my head, be'omek, in depth, and I don't even remember anything. All of my Torah, I'm forgetting it with my age. And that was something that for him was a struggle. It was what happened? Where did it all go? How did, to him, that was part of the loss, his ability to recognize that. And that was something that my wife's uncle, Michael Zossman from Male Adumim in Harova, he pointed out, he told me once that he went to ask Rav Rabinovich Ashayla a few years ago on Erev Pesach, about Hilchos Pesach, whatever. And Rav Rabinovich looked at him and said, I want you to know, in the future, I would rather you not ask me your halachic shailas. And I remember I was talking to him about this, to my wife's uncle about it, and I remember mentioning it then and thinking it, and it was very true. Many people, unfortunately, play up their role and try, and there's a sense of ego that plays up who they are, and they try and make themselves as big as possible. And some people try and put themselves in a corner and be anonymous like a fly on the wall. Rabinovich had this sense of self. He had an understanding that he had the anava of, he had a complete and total anava, as we mentioned, from Rav Sabato. He never requested kavod as a Rosh Yeshiva, and he tried to be as normal as possible. When he was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Jews College in London, he sat on a plastic chair. He refused to sit on the chair that was said that they'd gotten for the Rosh Yeshiva, and he sat on a plastic chair. He said, I don't need a fancy chair. I just need a plastic chair, just like the rest of the Bachurim. And he refused to sit in the seat special for the Rosh Yeshiva. He sat in the rest of the Beis Medrash with the guys on plastic chairs, just like everyone else. On the flip side, he had the sense of self. He had the understanding that people were coming to him with shailas, and he said, and he said this then, I don't want you to ask me shailas anymore, because he felt that he was starting to get a little older and to not be as sharp as he once was, and that was something that for him, he didn't want Chas V'Shalom to give someone the wrong answer because he forgot something or because he wasn't as sharp as he used to be. And he said, I'd rather people stop asking me now when it's earlier than to wait till it's too late and I mess up. And the sense of responsibility for Klal Yisrael, the sense of self, the sense of awareness to who he was, that was part of his personality. This, I know who he was. He was self-aware to the point that he recognized what was going on. He wasn't completely forgotten and trapped up in this ivory tower of himself. He was very, very acutely aware of everything. And that was something that I remember when he told me that story. For me, it was shocking. Many people, they refused to relinquish who they are until it's too late. And here he was ahead of the ball to a certain point. He said, yes, I know we could talk in Torah. He was still at the point where he could talk in Torah. He said, I don't want to be paskening your shailas anymore because I feel like I'm not who I used to be. I don't have to show the memory or the ability that I used to. And that was something that was really unique for me. And thought was so fascinating. Another aspect of Rav Rabinovich that I think is probably the more oft-discussed one is his role as a lambda and as Rosh Yeshiva, not just as a posek, not just as a sensitive man, but as a lambda. Probably his magnum opus, as for sure, is the Abshuta, his perish on the Rambam, where he goes through halacha by halacha, perek by perek, almost all of the Mishnah Torah. He didn't finish it himself, and he has some. There's some students in Maale Adumim who are trying to fill in the blanks where he missed. And he goes through halacha by halacha to try and get to the depths of the Rambam, answering kashya that were asked by earlier Achronim and other Rishonim on the Rambam. And I remember once I was talking about it with his grandson, and I said, we were talking about, I quoted something from Yad Pshuto, we had a whole discussion about it, and he said, and I asked him about, I mentioned the Yad Pshuto in our conversation, and he said, I once asked my grandfather, why did he write the Yad Pshuto? Why did he sit down? He literally spent his entire life with the Rambam. The Yad Pshuta and other books and articles that he's written specifically on the Rambam. Rambam and Aruch HaShulchan were his two crown jewels, as I said earlier. Everything was the Rambam and Aruch HaShulchan. Those were the two crowns of, in his eyes. And he said that once he had asked his grandfather, why the Yad Pshuta? Why did he choose to write that style book, that type of book, where he's writing real Yunim Lamdisha Perushim on the Rambam, going halacha by halacha, going in depth, going talking about it, mulling the depths of the Rambam. And the response that he told his grandson was that he said, over the past 800 years, every Jew alive has been asking questions on the Rambam and attacking the Rambam. Every shir is based off of the Rambam and the Rambam and the Rambam, and I feel, to a certain sense, a debt of responsibility to the Rambam that everyone's been attacking him. I need to write a book to defend him. And he basically, this way his grandson put it, was he said, I need to write a book that's going to defend the Rambam from all of the attacks of the Gedolei HaAchronim and other later Rishonim. And he set aside to write an entire set of Sfarim that are, you open them up, they're incredibly impressive, to defend the Rambam from the attacks of other Achronim. Questions in the Avi Ezri and all the Or Sameach and all the Gedolim who wrote on the Rambam and challenged the Rambam and argued with the Rambam left and right, and he said, someone needs to defend him. He's being attacked and it's not fair. And he went and he wrote an entire set of Sfarim to go through and to defend the honor of the Rambam and to try and go through and discuss it. And that was something that, you know, Yad Pshuta was so, it's he himself wrote 14 volumes, and there's more to come out, Bezrat Hashem, from recordings of his shirim that the yeshiva is going through and trying to put out more. And I remember once I was learning a sugya in Hilchos Nida, and there's a very, very famous in Kuf Pei Gimel, that, and there's famous Rambam, Shita of the Rambam, the Beis Yosef, that gets a lot of, all the Rishonim jump on the Rambam, and I was trying to look up what Rav Rabinovich wrote in the Yad Pshuta on the sugya, trying to understand it better. And I couldn't find it. I looked in the Otzer Svarim, and I looked in a few places. I looked online. I couldn't find the parish of Rav Rabinovich on it. And so I texted his grandson, Rav Zacharia, and I said, out of curiosity, I can't find it. Do you by any chance have a copy of the Rambam Yisurei Bia Yad Pshuta at home? And he messaged me back. It was a text message. And he said, unfortunately not. But that's not the Yisod. It's what he texted me after that. He said, I once asked my grandfather, everyone knows, and learning through the Rambam, Yisurei Bia is one of the most important Sfarim, Halacha Lamaisa, in all of the Rambam. All of Hilchos Nida, Yichud, a lot of really important sugyas that come out of Rambam Hilchot Yisurei Bia. And he said that he too had the same question, and he asked his grandfather, why didn't you write on Yisurei Bia? You wrote on some seemingly more obscure sections of the Rambam, but you didn't write on Yisurei Bia. That's really the crown jewel of the Rambam. One of the main Yisodos in the Rambam. And he said that Rabinovich responded to him and said, you know what? The reason I didn't write on Yisurei Bia is because I just don't fully understand it. I have so many kashyos on the Rambam Yisurei Bia that I couldn't come up with good answers to. So I just didn't write on it. It's funny to think of a Talmud Chacham, of someone with his background, with his knowledge, with his credentials, with just his breadth and pure brilliance, that he couldn't, but he was willing to have the anava and say, I can't write this book because I don't fully understand it. I don't fully have the opportunity and the ability to. There's so many questions I have that I haven't gotten to the depths of. How can I write that? How can I say that? And it's that that sense of anava, that sense of humility and pashtus that he says, you know, there's things that I don't know. There's things that I mamish, you know, katonti. There's things I really, really just don't know. That's missing. The amount of gedolim who have the opportunity and the ability to say, I don't know. Very often we get so stuck up, and oh, of course I know. And sometimes we don't know, and we come up with an answer. We think, and based on svara, I say this, I say that. But Rav Ramech had the point to say, how can I am not 100% on it. How can I know? Or as he mentioned in his husband, that he once went to his grandfather after a shir and said, how can you say that? This is, it seems to be that based on A, B, and C, that that's not right. And he said, you're right, the entire shir was wrong. And he said, a few weeks later, he came back to me and he said, my grandfather, Rav Rabinovich, came back and said, I found an answer to your question. The chiddush I said in shir was right. How many Rosh Yeshiva have the anava, have the sense of self and the sense of, you know what, I'm just another person, to after they give a whole big shir, they have a big chiddush, and one of the guys comes over and says, I have a question, and says, you're right, and throws the entire shir in the garbage, and then looks into the question in order to come back and say, no, I haven't answered your question, the chiddush stands in its place. And I think that's really a lot I could talk about Rav Rabinovich for a very, very long time. His machshava, his halacha, his chidushim, his personality. And it's someone who didn't really have very much of a personal connection. Had a connection through his Torah, through his books, through his chidushim, through his students. And there's something that, you know, Rav Rabinovich's personality was one that I personally learned so much from. I gained so much from the sensitivities that he had towards people asking shilas, from the ability to say, I don't know, from being a simple person who says, you know what, I'm just another person, I'm just, you know, he was very, very simple. He was never, you know, never wore a fancy long coat as the Rosh Yeshiva, as Talmud Chacham. He was always just, you know, himself, wore his gray hat on Shabbos. And that was part of just who he was. Sitting on his plastic chair and as the Rosh Yeshiva of Jews College. So his son mentioned Rav Mordechai in his hesped that Rav Rabinovich, when he was in England, he was offered a few different jobs to come back to America to be Rosh Yeshiva, to head numerous different institutions across the Hashkafic and Halachic spectrum. And Rabinovich said that he spoke about it with his father. Mordechai spoke about it with his father, Rav Nachum Eliezer, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. And that his father said, if I accept this job, I'll never make it to Eretz Yisrael. The fundamental role of Eretz Yisrael in his mind, in his hashkafa, was so critical. The role of Eretz Yisrael and the process of Geula, you read his Sichos, his Torah, his Machshava, and Mesil Bavavam, some of the Shirim that he's given on Yom Zikaron, Yom Atzmaut, some of the Shirim that he's given. It's incredible. His staunch opinion that we have a chiv to wear tchelet, his conviction that we need, not only should we go up to Harabayit, but we need to go up to Harabayit. Might have been the first Rosh Yeshiva to take his entire yeshiva onto Har HaBayit to say, we're going up to Har HaBayit. He held very strongly, kamavan, both of those very much in line with the Rambam. Felt that one should tie tchelet just like the Rambam. Felt that we should go up to Har HaBayit just like the Rambam writes. And Rav Rabinovich says, Kedarko B'Kodesh, we have the Rambam, we have Aruch HaShulchan. And he felt these were things that we couldn't shake on. And that's just a little bit, I don't know, I'm a little bit at loss for words. That's the personality to the persona of Rav Rabinovich. Someone who, you open up any of his svarim, you see his godless in halacha, in machshava, in hashkafa. His openness, his ability to question and to probe and to delve to the depths of human sensitivities. But to come out in a completely opposite way, I know this is Ravanovich has a tshuva in Siach Nachum about woman dancing with Sifrei Torah on Simchas Torah. And as most of us, we're all aware that it's become a very, very hot topic over the past 15, 20 years with Rebbeim from all across the Hashkafic spectrum weighing in, mutter, aser, okay, better not to, etc., etc. And Rabinovich in his tshuva on the topic says, I don't get the question. It's a stupid question. Not a stupid question. He says, it's a silly question. He says, if you open up the Medrash seems to says that the only people dancing with the Torah, when we dance with the Torah, we're putting ourselves in the center because I'm the one holding the Torah. And he says, I really don't get it. Well, based on the Medrash, what's really should happen is either the Rav of the community holds the Torah and everyone dances around the Rav holding the Torah, or you put the Torah on the tables in the middle and you dance around them. And he said, Simchas Torah is about our Simcha, about the Torah. It's not about us. And he said, women can dance with the Torah, but they shouldn't. But men shouldn't either. His whole thing was not should men dance with the Torah, should women dance with the Torah. He said, it has nothing to do with that. It's about the Torah being the center of our lives, the center being the pinnacle of our lives. And that's something that he held so strongly that he said, not only should women, regardless of women dancing with the Torah, he said, the men are wrong. We shouldn't be dancing with the Torah. The Torah should be put, we should put on the bima in the middle of the shul, all the Sifrei Torah. And we should dance around the Torah because the Torah is the center of our life. It's the linchpin. It's the key. It's the tombstone. The keystone, sorry. It's the keystone to our existence. And it's okay, so the Rosh Hashiva, the Rav, could dance with the Torah, and everyone should be dancing around them. He said, you could have an Isha Chashuva, you could have the Rabbanit, you have serious women who are real Talmidei Chachamot. So they should be dancing with the Torah, and the girls should be dancing around her, because it's about recognizing the Torah. It's not about putting ourselves, I'm the one holding up the Torah. It's the role the Torah has with each and every one of us, as we hold it up. As we walk through the Mesorah, we take the Torah, put it at the center of our lives. And we understand the Torah through a mindset of a modern 21st century Jew with the glasses of physics and science and electricity and mathematics and with the sensitivities and care and the ability to mix the antiquities of Halacha and Chazal and the Rishonim with the modern world that we live in with the utmost sensitivity and care to each and every person. That's what Rabinovich was all about. That's who he was. And that's who I think we should all be striving to be. Someone who upholds and cares about each and every halacha and chazal and the rishonim and the achronim, who are living in this world with a sense of sensitivity and care and understanding. And we should be zocha to live our lives ayidei kiddush Hashem and avas Hashem, just as Rav Rabinovich himself did and would want us to and instruct us to, that we should be continuing in the way that he paved and the derech that he set forth to be an aliyah for him and an aliyah for the entire world. That should Bezrat Hashem be Ilui Nishmat Rav Nachum Eliezer ben Sara Miriam Zecher Tzadik Livracha Shem Elitz Yosher Aleinu L'Kol Yisrael. We'll call it Olam Kulo. Amen.